Well, good afternoon. I'm Dawn Dyer. I work at the Bristol Reference Library. I've been there for many years. And what got me interested in the suffragettes, I was always interested in women's history, and as part of the local studies team, I was always looking to find more of interest about women and how they fitted into Bristol life. In about 2002, we produced this booklet, 100 Women of Bristol. Some of you may have seen it. And that got me very interested because we wanted a wide range of women who had contributed to Bristol's history. At the time, a lot of blue plaques were going up in Bristol. They were sort of starting 2000-2001. And I was on a group that decided there should be more plaques to women because most of the plaques that were going up were to men. So there was a committee who decided that more plaques to women would be a very good idea. So that started the research. We got some funding, which then brought out this booklet as well. We would have loved to have had 200 women, 300 women, but funding wasn't quite there. So we put this little booklet. And there's a variety of women, the good, the bad, interesting, the ones that for social reform, artists, writers, and suffragettes. And once I started looking into it, there were quite a few Bristol suffragettes, which surprised me because you think London, Manchester, that's where it's all happening. So that got me started. And it also got me started on collecting postcards to do with the movement, Edwardian postcards, and got me interested in the history. So that's where we start. First slide, please. Hope you can see that one. That's Manchester in about 1903. It's an Edwardian postcard. And that's where I start the talk, because this is the WSPU, Manchester. It's their home. It's where the Pankhursts were living at the time when they started the WSPU, the Women's Social and Political Union. So is that where it started? 1903, the start of the WSPU. The Pankhursts moved to London in 1906 and start their campaign, a very vigorous campaign of getting publicity, doing a magazine, doing meetings, doing public demonstrations. But is it where it started? Next one, please. This is Emmeline Pankhurst. This was produced in the Votes for Women magazine, which was produced in 1909. And they did a weekly newsletter. Originally, it was just going to be a small newsletter now and again, but it went so well, they started producing more of them. It became a weekly newsletter right up to 1912. Next one, please.
Can anyone see them?
No. Is that okay? No, this light coming through.
I was just wondering if we move the...
Maybe if you do it sideways.
...screen a little bit.
I think it's this light. It's the sun.
Turn
yes. Is that any better?
Can you turn the light
on? Is there? Could someone turn this light out?
It's not this one. I tried this. It's
not this. I don't know. It's not switching. I don't know. I think it's the sun more than the light. Is that any better? Hunt the light switch. That's great fun. Is that any better? Well, Emmeline Pankhurst, as Annie said to us earlier, they set up the WSPU in 1903. And the reason they set up the WSPU, lots of a long family history. Emmeline's mother and grandmother had been involved, her grandmother in the anti-slavery society, and her mother had also been working for women's suffrage in her youth. So Emmeline Pankhurst, by the time she'd had sort of three almost grown-up daughters, had got rather fed up with this and thought, we've been campaigning for 40, 50 years and we've got nowhere, so we need a change of direction, which is why she set up the WSPU. Because there had been women's suffrage societies in England, in America, there had been quite a few campaigning. They'd been petitioning government since about the 1860s to get the vote for women. And Emmeline and the Pankhurst daughters thought this had gone on for too long and they really wanted to make a change. One of the other groups is the Women's Freedom League. This is a small badge, which I do have, but I haven't brought it today. And their colours, if you can see, are gold, green and cream. WSPU are purple, white and green. And those colours, you could wear badges, you could wear rosettes, and each society had their own colour. The National Union of Women's Suffrage had red and green. But what one remembers is purple, white and green because I had this huge publicity campaign. Huge. And it just was so big that it's the colours that most people remember. Women's Freedom League was set up in 1908. It's one of these splits. People didn't like the militancy that WSPU was going more and more militant, and a lot of women didn't like that and decided to. Women's Freedom League was another way of campaigning for the vote. Next one, please. This is Miss Priestman. She's from Bristol. With Margaret Tanner, her sister, they were campaigning for women's vote and suffrage. They set up a women's society in 1868 in Bristol, and the office was in Park Street. The first committee, Miss Priestman and Mrs. Beddow. Miss Priestman was part of the Bristol Women's Liberal Association, and she helped campaign for them in sort of, you know, trying to raise funds, holding teas, campaigning with leaflets, that kind of thing. But obviously women didn't have the vote. As Annie said, they could join school boards, Liberal government, but that was it. They couldn't do anything else. So in the 1870s, the people you would maybe meet at these suffrage societies would be Mrs. Beddow, the Budgets, the Sturge family. They had about six daughters. They were all involved in social reform. Mary Carpenter, Emma Marshall, the writer, the Eslin family, Mary Eslin and her father. So they were all involved in the Bristol Women's Committee. The National Society for Women's Suffrage, Bristol and Clifton Group, is actually what it was called. And it was first set up in the sitting room of Matthew Davenport Hill's sitting room, to be exact, and his daughter had been given permission to hold the meeting, and he actually wrote a letter to say he'd given his permission for her to hold this meeting in his sitting room, to call a meeting in 1868. Next one, please. This is Agnes Beddow. She was the secretary of the first committee. She was also part of the Contagious Diseases Act. People were trying to amend that, trying to get it thrown out. This is where women, any woman, could actually be taken to a police station and medically examined. It was done in sort of army towns. If you were thought to be a prostitute, you could be medically examined. But it happened to ordinary working class women as well. Somebody who might be in the wrong place could be arrested and taken off for a medical examination. And a lot of middle class women didn't agree with this and thought this was outrageous. So joined actually various committees to campaign against it. And they did actually get there eventually. It took about 10 years, I think. But people like Mrs. Beddow and Miss Priestman, sort of middle class ladies, it's also about venereal disease, contagious disease, that's what it is. And they were campaigning to get this overruled. So these women were involved in social reform, they were on educational committees. They did have demonstrations, but they were quite polite demonstrations in something like the Colston Hall or a big Victoria meeting room, something like that. And they would call for a demonstration, and women would come and speak about suffrage and get people to sign the petitions that could then take government. Mrs. Beddow, she also knew Mary Carpenter and set up the Indian Association. And she also was part of the emigration board, which is where some children were taken to Canada to a better life, they thought. But we knew later that actually this was forced labour, which I didn't know at the time. But she was involved in all sorts of social reform. This is a celebration. And we have here the three main women. Emmeline Pankhurst on the right, Millicent Fawcett in the middle, and Charlotte Despard on the very left. They're not above their badges, unfortunately. When they did this, they're sort of slightly wrong. Millicent Fawcett in the middle is above her badge, which is the red and green National Union of Women's Suffrage. The WSPU is on the left, and Emmeline's on the right. And then the Women's Freedom League, I was telling you, Charlotte Despard is associated with that. So that's commemoration. This is Emmeline Pethick Lawrence. A lot of people don't actually know much about her, but she was actually born in Bristol of wealthy parents. Her father had several businesses. They later moved to Weston-super-Mare, which is why I think people don't know she was born in Bristol, because she was quite young, about 3 years old or something, and they moved to Weston. So they associate the Pethicks with Weston-super-Mare rather than Bristol. But she was born in Bristol, and there's a blue plaque on Charlotte Street on one of the houses next to St. George's Chapel now we've got that plaque put there. And she is very important because she was very close to the Pankhursts in the early days. She and her husband actually edited and ran the newspaper Votes for Women, which was published from 1909 to 1912. And I think some of her editorial skills may have come from her father, because he owned one of the Western Supermare papers. So I think maybe some of the skills she learnt there may have come from him. She was obviously quite wealthy, wealthy family, well brought up, well schooled. But the family did believe in social reform, and quite a lot of the family, brothers and sisters, went off to do social reform. She went to London, to the East End, to try and set up a girls' club. And while there, she met Frederick Lawrence, and first of all she'd have nothing to do with him because she thought his politics and her politics didn't quite meet, and felt that she would dedicate her life to the East End and the girls and that sort of thing. But eventually he talked her around and came round to her way of thinking. They got married and they joined their name, Pethick Lawrence. So that they agreed that they would be Pethick Lawrence, and not just, she wouldn't be Mrs. Lawrence, they'd be Pethick, and then he took her name as well. And he was also a barrister, and when a lot of the cases came up later in London, you know, with the window breaking and so forth, and they went to prison, she did also went to prison, her husband actually defended them and tried to get them bail and tried to get them out. And they also wrote for Votes for Women and did pamphlets and sold pamphlets as well. So she is very important. And she's also very important because she thought of the colours as well. Purple, white and green. It was her who thought they needed an image, they needed something to bring people together. And you do see a lot of things on the internet about, oh, it's a secret society and they wore this and that suit so that other people would know that they were belonging. But, I mean, there's nothing secret about WSPU. They were right out there, they were on the street, they were campaigning with posters and leaflets, they were wearing the colours proudly. You could buy soap in the colours, you could buy hats in the colours, you could buy just about anything in the colours, and they would also actually then have money coming into the coffers as well. Obviously private donation, selling the newspaper as well. Next, please. I'm afraid that was Apsley Road, it should have been, but I had an old-fashioned slide that was too thick. But Apsley Road, again, is one of the houses that the Pethicks lived in when she was very young. So it's a very big, as you go and see it, big, fancy house. So a very wealthy family. It just shows you the kind of background she's from. This is the WSPU, and this is on the front of the Votes for Women. It's a bound volume of magazines that we have in the reference library, which is a really unique set, actually. It's really wonderful to go through. Minded information, actually, what the WSPU were thinking and discussing and trying to campaign for. It was designed by Sylvia. I'm sorry, it's not terribly clear. It's my photography, I'm afraid. You can see it's an angel. It's in the background, got some bars, which represents sort of women going to prison. They've got a freedom banner. They've got the angel heralding with a trumpet for a new future. And obviously it's in the colours as well, purple, white and green. And there's also the emblems of England, Scotland and Wales. So if you look at the bottom, there's a rose, a Tudor rose, a Scottish thistle and the Welsh daffodil as well. Next, please. This is Annie Kenny, very close friend of the Pankhursts. And she came to Bristol as a regional organiser for about 4 or 5 years, and she lived in Bristol. She unfortunately doesn't talk about her Bristol time in Memories of a Militant, which is her biography, which is a real shame for me, because I was really hoping there'd be something really interesting in there. But she does write in Votes for Women magazine, and she writes as, you know, Annie Kenny from Bristol, you know, the latest, we had a demonstration last week, and, you know, we talked on the street corner here and there, and so you do find her letters in the Votes for Women magazine. Next, please. This is Gordon Road in Clifton. There's a plaque on this house for Annie Kenny because she lived there for a few years. She did move around. There's another house in Alma Road because I think she rented or was a lodger or something. You know, it's difficult to pin her down, but we did actually pin her down to this road for at least a year or two. Next one here. that's the plaque on the wall. Now, you have to remember these are private houses and they've agreed to have a plaque put on their wall, but I didn't really feel I could march up to the front door and take a better photograph. So I'm sorry it's not terribly clear, but it is there if you want to go and have a look. This is the Votes for Women magazine from 1908. It's Wentworth and Howie. And Vera Wentworth and Elsie Howie were not from Bristol, but they did come down here to help campaign and help Annie Kenney. They would have gone down to sort of Wills's factory and standing on the corner trying to talk to people. And Annie did tell us that the WFP were very autocratic and they did sort of lose their way a little bit about some of their roots. But there were times in 1909 that they were still going to the factories and trying to talk to people. They did have campaign demonstrations up on the Downs and thousands of people came. So I think there were still elements in the party even then where they still were to their roots. It's later on they really do start splitting off again, you know, to the middle class. Narrowing it down a bit too much, which is where you get Sylvia splitting off. And also the Pethick Lawrences, they had a row with them as well. And here we have the Bristol campaign. This is signed by Annie Kenney. The movement, London and the provinces. That's us, that's Bristol, the province. Mm-hmm. So it just tells you the kind of things that they're doing. So it's fascinating reading because the local papers didn't always tell you very much about what was happening, especially in the early days. 1906, you might get the odd reference in the local newspapers, but by 1909, they're beginning to take it more seriously. They're beginning to sort of report what's happening about the demonstrations and what have you. And the militancy is gaining more ground. Sort of talking out in meetings with when the politicians came, they would heckle the meetings. So much so, they banned women from entering at all at any of the meetings. Which is why women started dressing up as men or boys and trying to get in that way, because women were banned from the political meetings. Next one. Oh yes, there's another demonstration throughout the country. They would try and do some cheap offers for the GWR, so persuade women to go up to London and try and get cheap day returns to join the marches and the demonstrations in London as well. Where you could wear your sash or your bonnet in the colours and march the streets. Next one. Oh, is that the same one? This is Elsie Howie's Joan of Arc. As I say, she wasn't local, but they did come to Bristol and campaign for a few years, so their name, you know, did get in the newspapers and... they would share the sort of roles that if you know, she was Joan of Arc in this particular demonstration, and they tried to sort of show that women in the past had done a lot of good for their country or their religion or their politics. So all the great women of history, they would march through the streets dressed up, and Joan of Arc was one that could ride a horse, so that would be quite dramatic. She had a white horse, a big pennant banner, some sort of armour, probably with rosettes and things to do with the colours again, purple, white and green. And Elsie Howie is also very important, along with Vera Wentworth, because they hid in the coast from Fort Organ. So they're quite important locally for that reason. Next one. And here we have herself, Teresa Garnett. This is a picture of her from the Votes for Women magazine. Here she is wearing a white dress, which is something else they would do. They would wear their white dresses and wear the sashes or bonnets with the colours. You could buy these sashes, obviously, from the shop. We had a shop in originally Queen's Road, small office, and then it moved to the Park Street sort of end opposite the museum. And WSPU had an office there as well. And you could buy your postcards of Christabel. You could buy your soap. You could buy the pamphlets telling you all about women's suffrage and what it was all about and why you should join. And Teresa Garnett was actually from Leeds. She was a school teacher. So again, she wasn't local, but she came here and lived here for a couple of years. And she did do the famous whipping of Churchill. I mean, part of the story is that she'd come on the train but couldn't find him because his security was around him on the train. So she got off and thought she might find him on his way out. So she did, and she had the whip up her sleeve. and then just sort of managed to walk up to him. That's why the security men were so surprised, because she was just normally dressed as an Edwardian lady, had the whip up her sleeve, and then approached him and just suddenly put it out and whipped him. Though again, there's a long story about that one, did she or didn't she? In the Vote to Women magazine, she said, yes, she did strike him, and he was so surprised, and the security men were surprised, and they managed to wrestle the whip away. Some stories say he took the whip away with him as a souvenir. She was arrested, and she was originally charged with assault, but she said, I'll call Winston Churchill as a witness then. So at that point, they thought, well, maybe we don't want that. He didn't want to stand as a witness, so she got charged with breach of the peace instead, and not assault. Later in life, as an old lady, she denied she'd ever actually hit him. She said no contact was actually made. So, you know, you just think, well, what was the story? Did they really want to make a big thing of it in Votes for Women? Yes, I struck Winston Churchill. And maybe later on she decided, perhaps in her youth, a bit of folly. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know what the... She changed her mind later, for whatever reason. And the other interesting thing about her, of course, that in the war she was a nurse. And she had a medal from Winston Churchill. So there we are, another part of the story. Next one, please. Oh, this is York Road Place. This is where Teresa Garnett lived for a short time. She probably just rented a room, you know, as a lodger, as a tenant for a short time. There's no plaque there, unfortunately. We haven't managed to get that one yet. Oh, these are the hunger strikers. This is Teresa Garnett and Lillian Dove Wilcox. This is July 1909. They both ended up in Holloway. In fact, Teresa Garnett was in Horfield Jail for a month after that breach of the peace with Churchill. She was in Horfield Jail, and there are records in the record office for Horfield Jail if anyone wants to look at the actual record. Next one. More on the hunger strikers. The Votes for Women did a lot of, you know, the personal experiences of the women, and they would write in their experience and how they've been treated by the warders, if they went on hunger strike, what their experience was, and they would have big celebrations when they came out as well after the hunger strike. And they were also presented with brooches that were made by and designed by Sylvia to show they'd been on hunger strike and been in prison. And Lillian Dove Wilcox is also very interesting. She was a local woman. She was a widow by this time, 1909, so she actually had some money of her own, and that's why I think she felt she could join the movement. And her mother had campaigned, as Emmeline Pankhurst's mother had for 40 years, to try and get the vote the quiet way, with the petitions, talking to MPs, and she got disillusioned and decided enough was enough, and she joined the militants, and she did go on a hunger strike. I think she broke some windows. In 1909 we're not getting really into the arson yet, so I think it was breaking windows she was charged with, and they did want to get arrested. They would stand there, break a window and stand there waiting for the police with them, because as Annie was telling us, some of these middle class ladies, well dressed, and they couldn't believe that they had just broken the law by criminal damage. Basically, it's breaking windows, criminal damage, and it's a working class crime really. They couldn't believe these elegant ladies had actually done it. And they said, no, it was me, I did it, definitely. And they would stand there waiting to be arrested. They wanted their day in court, which is what it was about. They wanted to be able to go to court and stand up and say, I am campaigning for Votes for Women, that's why I broke the window. That's what they wanted. Next one, please. That's Lillian Dove Wilcox. It's her picture. And her father-in-law, so she was a widow by this point, her husband had died young, her father-in-law wrote a letter to the paper in disgrace because she was joining the campaign, and he said, I've got nothing to do with this woman, and I want it known, I have nothing to do with this woman. Next one, please. This is the prison sketch by Sylvia Pankhurst. Women wore, as Annie showed us, prison garb, which was made rough cloth, wasn't very comfortable, was scratchy and irritating. And what they had wanted to do, the WSPU, was campaign to be political prisoners. They wanted to wear their own clothes, but they weren't allowed. They weren't counted as political prisoners. They were counted as criminal damage. They're breaking windows, doing that kind of thing was a criminal damage, therefore they were ordinary prisoners and they weren't allowed to wear their own clothes. I think there was a slight relenting later on. Once you get into the hunger strikers and the cat and mouse, it changes slightly. This is a comic postcard of the time, probably about 1909. And here we have a wonderful, elegant woman in prison with a laughing policeman outside. But as I say, they didn't wear their own clothes. I do actually have some of these postcards. Once I started the booklet, I went a bit mad and started collecting lots of postcards, so I've got quite a few now. So if you want to see any of those up close, then you can do later, if you like.
What's it say?
Oh, I'll never be a fool again. On the bottom. That's another postcard. Some of them could be quite unpleasant. This one is a woman with a tongue and padlock. You know, in other words, woman, be quiet. You know, shut up. You know, go back to the kitchen. And some of them could be quite nasty and horrible, as that one is. Some of them were for suffrage. Some of them were against. You know, you can tell a whole lot of interesting things from these old postcards. There's also an artist suffrage, which was part of WSPU as well. There was an actress franchise. There were all these little branches of them, and they all had their own colours. The actress franchise was pink and green. And the artist suffrage would do these political postcards and sell them at events in the shops as well. And people would then use these and send them to friends. Next one. This one's quite nice. This is father dressing the baby. It's a little, I don't know if you can read it on the bottom, can't read it. It's something about addressing the meeting and father's dressing the baby. Mother's addressing the meeting and father's dressing the baby, basically. That's what it is. And it's also interesting if you look at the colours of the baby clothes on the floor. Pink. They're green, purple and white. So there's a very subtle thing there. Again, that by 1909, the colours are really coming into people's consciousness. The suffragettes are purple, white and green. Though we know there are all these other societies. The red and green for the National Union Women's Societies, the actress franchise, the actresses franchise, the artist franchise. There was the Catholic League, there was the Tax Resistance League, there was a men's league, because some men also believed in women's suffrage. So there were all these leagues, and there was also the women's opposing suffrage organised by Mrs. Humphrey Ward in 1908 as well. She was a novelist, and she believed women shouldn't be concentrating on the vote excuse me, because she felt that social reform should be ground root social reform, and women should be doing that and not wasting their efforts on the vote. And there were other women who agreed with her and were opposing the vote because they felt their energy should be in social reform and not getting the vote for themselves. Next. So another one, I Want My Vote. A cat, again in the colours, purple, white and green. And again, animals figure quite largely as well. Christabel Pankhurst was a goose. She was the hissing gander. And there were other sort of cats. Some of the cats were for suffrage, some of them were against. Sometimes they used babies. You know, mummies at the suffragette meeting, so the baby's crying and left alone. Sometimes babies sort of standing there saying, I want my vote, or they're sitting there reading a newspaper, you know, sort of trying to find out more about politics. So there's all sorts of postcards which are quite fun. Next one. This is a programme from the Prince's Theatre in Bristol, 1910, How the Vote Was Won. The other thing they used to do was go around the country giving demonstrations and plays. The Pageant of Great Women was one of them, and also How the Vote Was Won. Obviously something for the future, because the vote wasn't won in 1910. This was a sort of a satire on what they would do when the vote was won. And they used to just try and raise people's consciousness to come to these theatre programme meetings. Local women could also take part in the Pageant of Great Women. There were children who could take part in the plays. So they would get actresses coming down from London taking some of the main parts, but then local women could also take part in these as well and stand on the stage and take part. Next one, please. There's quite a few on this programme, which we have in the reference library. But that's the matinee. I don't know if you can see there, it's got the offices being...
I'm trying to look at the screen again.
Yeah,
the sun's
changed again.
Better than when it was. Is that better?
Yeah, maybe better then. Is it?
Dawn, I've got a big level coat I can hang over it.
If it's going to be high enough, actually. Right, here we are, Queen's Road. It's advertising the shop. So people would have the programme if they went to the theatre. Then they would find out about the future events and what was coming. I think Christabel was coming. Perfect Lawrence was coming for the next event. Advertising the shop. They also had at homes. Annie was saying about that. The women's homes, middle class women would have at home teas. And they would donate any money and collections to the WSPU. They would also have Votes for Women biscuits as well, and they would sort of sell postcards. Next one, please. Here we have the matinee. Tells you who's taking part in the pageant. And some of the names are things like the Tuckets, who are a local family, if you know Bristol. The Tuckets are a local family, and the Tuckets' names are actually on the programme. So they were there. Next, please. Here we have the Pageant of Great Women, a special matinee.
Were the advertisers submitted to the cause?
Sorry, I can't hear.
Were the advertisers, like Fry's, sympathetic to the cause? Is that when they were on the programme?
I don't know. They must have got some funding somehow, but quite what the background to it was, I don't know. I'm afraid that would take more research to find out whether they must have known. They must have been sort of for women's suffrage. We still haven't got full militancy at this stage. Yes, we've had some breaking of windows, but it's not a full-scale militancy that came later. So maybe they did approve at the time of women's suffrage generally. Next one. Again, just a list of names of people taking part in this. Next one. Oh, this is quite a fun postcard. This is Diana of Dobson's, which was a play based on a novel. Diana is a working class girl. She works in a shop, and she comes into some money from an aunt or something, and she decides this money is not going to be saved up for a rainy day. She is going to spend it all. So she gets some really wonderful clothes, dresses up, and goes off to Europe to the spa, and enjoys a high life, but she's not forgetting her roots. She's quite sort of socialist, Labour. She believes that, you know, women should be able to earn their own money, keep their own money when they marry. Their husband shouldn't get the money when they marry. And she meets this wonderful gentleman, a young man, in the spa, and they talk about politics. And he doesn't see her point of view, not knowing she's a shop girl. He thinks she's an elegant lady and doesn't realise she's a shop girl. And then her money runs out. And then she tells him, well, actually, I'm a shop girl, I'm going back to England now. And he hadn't agreed with her politics. And she, at one point, had said to him, why don't you walk, you should walk in those shoes and see how far you get on sixpence a day. So when he comes back to England, and one day she sees him on a railway station, sort of, you know, begging. And she's most shocked and thinks, well, what's happened? Have you lost all your money? And he says, no, he says, I took your advice, and I thought I'd see what it was like. I thought I'd just walk the streets and see, you know, what life was like. And this is the end of the play, where they're sitting on a park bench having a British Rail cup of tea and a bun. And that's where they look at each other and think, well, maybe, you know, we've got somewhere to go in the future. And also Annie Kenny says in her biography that after one of her demonstrations, she rushed off to see Diana of Dobson's at one of the play theatres. It's not clear whether she meant in Bristol or in London, because she did move around between the two. But it's interesting that she did go to see this play. Punch didn't think much of it. They were quite cheeky about it and made something rude, as Punch would. But anyway, Diana of Dobson's was very much sort of a women's play, and it was quite popular at the time. Another postcard. This is called Presented at Court. And I was telling you they wanted their day in court. And here we have a woman climbing over the bench to his, you know, the Lord Judge is quite shocked. And she's waving a placard in his face. Her day in court. Well, if you're talking about the wealthy middle-class ladies, you know, presented at court with the feathers and the Prince of Wales and all that, he or she is presented at court in a rather different way as a being charged probably with breaking a window or setting fire to something. Next one. This is a game called Panko, again quite popular for the WSPU because they're in the colours, the purple, white and green. This is a game you could buy from the WSPU shop to help support the cause, and it was all about a bit like Snap, I think. You know, there are numbers on the cards, so if you had a Mrs. Pankhurst, you got more, or if you ended up in prison, you know, and things like that. So it's quite good fun. Quite a good fun game. There's also another one called Pankersquiff, which is a bit like Ludo. It's a big spiral, and you could sort of jump on counters and end up in prison or end up in House of Lords or something. You know, it's quite good fun. That's quite rare. If you ever find one, buy it quick because it's very rare. Next one. This is another one of those, if you want an apium, get a poker. So it's sort of talking a lot about sort of domestic violence of the time. There were women who were campaigning against drinks. A lot of women joined temperance movements. There was all this idea that if, you know, men beating their women are getting drunk, breaking up the home. And then as you get women's suffrage coming in, it's the other way around. It's women with the poker beating the men up. You know, if you let women have the vote, what they'll do is turn violent and start beating other people up, beating their men up instead. Next one. Houses of Parliament. This is a series of about 8 different cards. If you can see, the lady at the back has got a brick about to hit the policeman on the head. And the woman in the front is wearing a sort of Tyrolean hat and has an umbrella. She's probably based on Lydia Becker, who was of German extraction, and she was an early part of the movement of women's suffrage. So sometimes these images you see again and again of some sort of strange woman, sort of mannish woman, in a hat and an umbrella, and that's supposed to be based on Lydia Becker. And all these cards give little verses about women trying to get into the house that man built. If you know the house that Jack built, you know, the 19th century political story. Next. This is Christabel. Rather charming one actually. She's dressed in sort of arts and crafts style dress with jewellery, and that's something else they were also interested in, getting rid of the corsets, trying to have dress reform so women weren't bound up and tight in corsets and couldn't move, couldn't run, couldn't be free, couldn't play games. They would make their own dresses. The Pankhursts were also into textiles and making dresses as well, and embroidery. So you can see very much arts and crafts movement there. This is a great postcard. It's got a Norwegian stamp on it. Norway had the vote for women before we did. And the little girl is saying, "Now, where's my vote?" And she's got this great big hammer. This is by Mabel Lucy Atwell, who did a lot of illustrations for children's books and cards and postcards. She's quite a famous artist. And it's quite interesting to find that one. She must have been supportive of women's votes. A very aggressive little girl with her big hammer. And that's something else that the women would carry if they went to, say, Bond Street and smashed the windows of Swan and Edgar. They'd have these toffee hammers. Again, they might have them in a basket or up their arm before they got there, but once they got there and smashed the window, they'd stand there with their hammer and say, "Yes, I did it, arrest me." Next, please. This is Burrell. He came to Bristol for a meeting, a political meeting, May the 14th, this one. And again, by this point, women have been campaigning quite fiercely. They're no longer content to present their petitions to Parliament. They make an arrangement to go and see the Prime Minister at number 10, hand in their petition with their thousands of names and go away. They started breaking windows. Excuse me. They've started heckling in meetings, as I say, so much so that they were banned from going in, and they would dress up in, you know, boys' clothes with their hair under hats, or they would hide in cupboards and then suddenly leap out and throw pamphlets around and leaflets. So ministers are starting to get a bit wary. You know, they couldn't turn a corner without a suffragette suddenly leaping out in front of them with a leaflet. So this idea that poor old man's got to hide himself away with security because he's going to, you know, suddenly have somebody at him. And of course the whole thing with Teresa Garnett, of course she did actually have the whip and she did sort of try to attack Churchill, so they started getting a bit worried that things were getting worse. I've got some great Punch cartoons as well which show women popping out of manholes and hiding behind beers and suddenly popping out in front of ministers. Next one please. This is a postbox one. The little girl is saying she's not a suffragette. And of course another thing they did do was pour ink or set fire to postboxes as well. So this little girl is saying she's not a suffragette, she's just an innocent little girl. And there are also postcards of a great sort of Heath Robinson one where a big boot comes out and kicks the suffragette away with her acid and her ink away from the postbox. So people started getting quite nervous about posting letters. Next one. This is the book The Suffragette by Sylvia Pankhurst. She mentions Teresa Garnett's attack on Churchill in that booklet. And the badge on the front's quite interesting. That's the brooch that they gave the women for their prison service. That's the design that Sylvia had. The colours are purple, white and green on the front. It's a bit faded. But that's the badge that Teresa wore, that she was accused of biting a wardress. And she said, oh, I didn't bite anybody. The wardress caught her hand on this brooch I was wearing. Because you can see it's got quite sharp little points on it and what have you. So she was accused of biting the wardress. And she denied it and said, no, they manhandled me very roughly. And she caught her hand on this brooch. This is 1913. This is a Loxton drawing we have in the library. And it's the Coombe Dingle Sports Pavilion, the University Sports Pavilion. It was burned by the militants. There were lots of leaflets lying around, votes for women. They didn't catch who it was. We don't know who it was. There's been various theories about who it may have been. And there were a couple of other buildings burnt, at least six or seven in Bristol. Small manor houses, a lodge. They always tried to make sure that no one was in the building at the time. They didn't want any loss of life. It was property. They were battling against property and places where perhaps women weren't welcome, like the men's sport pavilion as well. So they burnt that. And in retaliation, the students wrecked their office on Park Street and threw everything out the window and set it on fire and burnt it in retaliation. So that there are some photographs of that, which I do have with me, but I haven't got a slide of it. This is a small little figure, it's about this high. It's a little match spill. You know, when you used to light your fires, they used to put a little match spill on the mantelpiece. And it's a little girl wearing boxing gloves. I don't know if you can see it on this one, but she's wearing white, purple and green. So again, this is sort of probably just before the war, 1914. The colours, purple, white and green, very well known. The little girl who's wearing boxing gloves, very determined. There's a little figure of a little boy that goes with it. Which I didn't have at the time, but I do now. And he's looking very cowed and sort of frightened. And there's the girls there with her gloves, so that's that thing about women maybe becoming violent. Next, please. Here we have Emily Davison. This is 1909. This is where she went to prison in Holloway. And she wrote in the journal that when she went to Holloway, she was very pleased to see on the prison wall that someone had been in prison before her, and it had been Lillian Dove Wilcox, a Bristol woman. She had actually been in that cell, and that gave her courage and hope that another woman had survived being in prison before her, and someone she knew. So that gave her hope. There's a very long story about Emily Davison. You know, she threw herself under the horse, the King's horse. Did she mean to kill herself? Well, she always said she was ready to be martyred for the cause, deeds, not words. But she did have a return ticket in her purse, so she may have thought to disrupt the race to get some publicity for the WSPU, but she may not have thought she would die, may have not been in her mind, but she always said she was well prepared to do so. This is her tombstone in Morpeth, where she came from. I've actually got a reproduction of the 1913 suffragette newspaper, which had a whole spread about Emily, and I've got a reproduction of it here if you want to look at it later. So we've had the arson, things are, you know, the big split in the movement. Sylvia's gone her own way with the East End, with her working class women. She's a pacifist, she doesn't believe in the war effort, she does what she can to try and get peace. Emmeline and Christabel are very much for the war effort and do encourage women to join the factories, encourage men to join up. Their militancy has gone another way. They are just determined to fight the Germans and do what they can. Parliament did release women from prison who had been in prison for various offences, and they put all their efforts there. Emmeline Pethick Lawrence and her husband had also split from the WSP at about 1912. Well, the Pankhurst threw them out, basically, because they hadn't agreed with everything that was being said, and especially the arson. Emmeline Pethick Lawrence had gone to prison for, I think, breaking a window, and she'd also gone on hunger strike. But when the militancy got worse, Emmeline Pethick Lawrence thought the arson, that was going too far, starting to do that, so they split. And they were no longer editors of the magazine, but produced the magazine in a different format. This one's quite an interesting card because this one was actually published in Bristol. It's a savoury postcard, if you know the printers in the Edwardian period, it's the Bristol one, of women holding munition shells and saying, you know, come and join the factory. I've put this one in for the nurses because Teresa Garnet, as I was telling you, joined as a nurse later in the First World War and received a medal from Churchill. And you will get postcards like this, you know, the sort of angel in the house, the good woman. You've got women going into factories, and you've also got women dealing with wounded soldiers. This is something about the flapper vote. So by the 1920s, they're calling her an ussy, a hussy, because in the past we were always the fluffy sort, the two women on the right. You imagine them being fluffy. But if you look at the clothes they're wearing the red and green, and the purple, white and green. So in people's consciousness, even into the 20s, they still know those colours. They know those colours associated with women, though it's not sort of stated in this card. But if you know anything about it, then you know that's what they're doing. And the other sort of thing I was going to mention about the war, you were saying, well, why did women get the vote? And not all women got the vote. But one of the things that I considered, we had all these women going into munitions who'd learned things in the factories. What would have happened if some sort of peace offering about women's votes had not been given in 1918? What would have happened? You had all these women who had learned far more in the munitions factories about bombs and fire making than you would have done before. Would the militancy have got worse again? How much worse could it have got? I mean, that's something that I've thought about, and you sort of think, well, I wonder if that's why. They thought they'd better give some sort of peace offering to women after the war, because otherwise what kind of militancy would come next? And here we are slightly later again into the sort of real flapper era. Charming young woman dressed up, and she's kind of quite a saucy sort of mix, really. But what is she wearing? She's wearing purple, white and green. Still, women, you know, that consciousness of women and those colours are very much associated, even though we know all those other societies also campaigned for the vote. But the colours have now become just associated with women generally.